Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, features editor at Billboard and Tony attendee and Broadway fan here, of course. So today we have a special non-Friday edition of Billboard on Broadway because, as I hope all of you know, the Tony Awards were last night. There is a lot to talk about. And thankfully, I have someone else to talk about them with today. You can hear him laughing in the background because he's so delighted to be here. Mo Brady is someone who we have a little bit of a mutual admiration society, I think. He's the co-creator and host of The Ensemblist, which is a great podcast for anyone who is really interested in kind of the inner workings of musical theater. It's all about the people in the ensembles of shows in Broadway and in theaters across the country, and provides such great insight into what it's like to not be the star of the show and be the person working their asses off 8 days a week and making the stars look good. So I highly recommend you tune into The Ensemblist. It's been around since 2013. But Mo also works at Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, a super important nonprofit that if you go to shows, you sometimes hear their annual or
biannual,
twice a year. Call to donate to a really great cause. And you got an awesome shout out from Judith Light last night.
Yeah. Well, she won the Isabel Stevenson Humanitarian Award, right?
Yes.
And so she's always been such a great advocate of Broadway Cares from the very beginning.
Yeah. No. And I mean, who's better to get a shout out from
than Judith Light,
than the icon herself?
Yes, everyone's mom.
Yes, who I stood very close to her on various occasions last night, but we'll get into that later. But I was just sort of trying to bask in the Judith Light glow. So thank you for coming today, Mo.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I'm such a big fan of your podcast, and so to be here is really thrilling.
And something else important to know about Mo is that before he joined Broadway Cares, he was also a performer on Broadway. So I would really love to hear your insights, too, of having been on the other side of Tony Award season and what it's like.
Oh, definitely. I think what's sort of the biggest surprise is how excited everyone is to be on the Tonys. I mean, you see that. You see that on social media. You see that excitement that everybody has. It's like, yes, it's a job. Yes, it's 8 shows a week. But for some reason, we just all get hype about this one time. I think because it connects with our families back home and with ourselves when we were younger. It's just, it really is that much of a party for everybody in the Broadway community as well.
And have you, in your past acting life, actually gotten to perform on the Tonys before?
No, I've never been to the Tonys before. So you're one up on me, Rebecca. You've actually been there. I have
questions.
That
feels unfair. Well, I've always been interested to hear about the dress rehearsal. I've never been to the dress rehearsal.
I've been to the actual show. It's super fun. The morning of, at like 9 a.m., they will do an invited dress rehearsal for, I'm not exactly sure who it's for.
Yeah, I don't know who gets to go to. It's a weird variety of people.
I've gone through Broadway Cares is how I've been invited. But basically, they run the show from start to finish without stopping And you get to see kind of the structure of it. You get to see what the opening number is going to be. You get to see the numbers that every show has chosen. They do fake winners. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, I think they say something like, for this rehearsal only, the winner for best featured actress in a musical is, and then they'll mm-hmm. say a fake person. Some of the celeb hosts are there, some are not. I think you can sort of tell based on who says names correctly later yes. in the evening.
Yeah, but that went pretty well last night. But yeah, I heard about how, I think maybe through Beetlejuice, about how it's, yes, Alex Brightman did an interview with us before the Tonys where he was talking about the fact that the Tony dress rehearsal is really like full makeup, full run through. It's not just like going through the paces of the number. And then they go back and they do their Sunday matinee and then they come to the Tonys. So yeah. It's like an incredibly full day for the nominees.
I think it's sort of like the live musicals where they do it in full costume because mm-hmm. just in case there's a problem with the filming, the live broadcast later in the day, they can cut back to it.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I think that's why they do that. And those little snippets where they show on television, like when they recap the nominees for Best Musical or Best Revival, I think those are actually taken from the afternoon mm-hmm. rehearsal. So they can get those packages ready.
That makes sense. Well, so how was your viewing experience last night?
My viewing experience was great. It was just me and my husband on the couch in suburban New Jersey. We started a little late because we were putting our 3-year-old son to bed, but we got to watch the whole thing. We stayed quiet during the musical numbers. We talked during the commercials. Ideal Tony party
etiquette. Ideal Tony etiquette, yes. Oh, my God. People who talk during the singing, it's bad. Well, in many ways, that is the ideal way to watch yes. the Tonys, I think.
Well, I got to use the restroom whenever I wanted. I could go get a drink of water, whatever I wanted.
Presumably, you can, like, eat pad thai and just, like, chill out.
Sure. I was in comfy clothes. You had a very different experience, though.
I did, yes. So I've been lucky enough to go to the Tonys. This is my third year going. The past 2 years, I went by myself, and this year I got to bring a guest, which was very nice because it is a very long night. I think that from years of watching award shows, particularly things like the Oscars, where you hear the celebrities who attend complaining about being like starving by the time it's over and they just have to like eat their hand because it's like such a long night. I've always been like, really? Is it that hard? But it actually is a very long night. I mean, you know, the Tonys happen at Radio City Music Hall in New York, and they start at a very precise time at 7:00. The doors close. And for an hour before the actual broadcast starts, the sort of creative arts awards, I guess, happen. So we get to see longer speeches than the ones that are kind of snippeted later on in the live broadcast, which I love because I feel like the people who do costume and lighting design and the choreographers, like they give some of the best speeches, much like they do yeah. at the Oscars. They're like the kookiest, most creative people. And I was particularly moved by there were a couple of great speeches during that first hour, but Sergio Trujillo, who choreographed Ain't Too Proud, who I should say I've known for a few years now, and I'm like so personally happy for him. The dancing in that show is incredible. But he is originally from Colombia, and he gave like an incredibly moving speech that got a standing ovation in the room about having first been an illegal immigrant when he came to the country and about how long his career has actually been leading to this moment. So that was a really great moment that people didn't get to see on TV.
He's such a sort of Broadway success story. You know, he started yeah. as a Broadway ensemble member. He's been choreographing on Broadway for 10 years, but like wasn't being nominated for some of his really great work, like Memphis. We did the Addams Family together, Sergio and I. So to see him sort of be embraced by the nominating committee and then embraced by the Tony voters as a whole, I think is so great. He's such an exciting choreographer. He creates such vibrant movement. And it was a joy to see him up on that stage. I think it's really fun to see people who look like really excited to win the awards.
Totally,
you know?
Totally. There was some really genuine emotion on his part. And I think even for some of the people who I really, really wanted to win last night, their speeches didn't sound somewhat prepared. Mm-hmm. I loved Ali Stroker's speech, but she was so calm and collected. Yes. I was like, is someone a little ready for this?
Sure, sure. Well, you have things you want to get out there, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Definitely. Especially when you're when you have sort of like that. I don't know, that news peg, you know, Rachel Chafkin talking about women, Allie talking about diversity. They all sort of talked about diversity in their own ways. And
yeah,
yes, you want to thank your mom and your family, but you also want to like sort of recognize the bigger moment of it all.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think being prepared is certainly better than
the alternative.
Not in most cases. But like you said, it is nice to see that these moments of just genuine raw emotion that come out.
Was that your favorite speech last night?
Sergio's? I think so. I loved Rachel's as well.
Rachel's was so great.
Yeah.
I thought that as well. What did she say? She said she was talking about women and diversity, and she said it wasn't a pipeline issue. It's a failure of imagination by those whose job it is
to be imaginative.
And it was a thought that I have obviously we've thought before, but she put it into words I had never heard before.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great. And it was also it had really hit home for me because when they were announcing the nominees on stage and they were showing the pictures, it was like four older white men and then her. And I was like, oh, my God, she's like she looked lonely. And like she said, so much of Hadestown is about, you know, knowing that you're not alone in a larger community. And that was sort of not her experience. So I thought it was a really timely but also like super relevant moment to be talking about that.
The other speech that I loved was Andre DeShields.
Yeah.
He's just like, he's like the kooky old grandpa we all wish we had.
Yes,
you know?
He's like, he's living on another planet or plane than the rest of us.
What did he say? There are not enough minutes to explain my 73 years on the earth plane for those who have loved me into consciousness. I was like, who comes up with that?
I know. And what other plane has he been living in? That's what we don't know about.
But his three, you know, I didn't write down his three sort of guides for living.
Yeah, but they were amazing.
Slow is the fastest way to be there. Surround yourself with people whose eyes light up when you walk
when
in
they
the
see,
room.
Yes.
I was like, oh, this is just, you do just want to sit with Andre DeShields.
And also, did you see his shoes?
Oh, yeah, the gold shoes.
The gold shoes with the wings were incredible. Yeah.
I assumed that was a Hermes reference.
Yes.
Yes. And he's just such a force in the show, too. Was he your pick for best featured actor in a musical?
I figured that he would be. It seemed also like a great moment to be acknowledging his career as well. And he really, you know, he's just watching him on stage in that show is like, it's like watching a dancer. And he's just like so elegant and so cool and sort of quietly magnetic. And, you know, I obviously never saw him in The Wiz, but I can sort of imagine him as The Wiz very easily.
We at Broadway Cares, a couple years ago, we did an anniversary tribute to The Wiz and Andre came out. Lilias White performed as well. It was so he did The Wiz's number from the top of Act Two.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, so you wanted to meet the wizard.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. He's a singular force, which is so thrilling in the show as well. You do feel like you're sort of like watching a piece of theater history when you're watching him perform.
Yeah, completely. So I think like during the show itself, first of all, we should talk a little bit about James Corden. And hosting. You know, this is something that he is comfortable with at this point.
Sure.
And he, you know, I think that he's an appropriate host in so many ways because he's been probably one of the most vocal people on, if not the most vocal person on network television for musical theater and has done so much on his show to bring it to a wider audience. I'm going to say that last night was like not my favorite year of him hosting. Like for whatever reason, the opening number didn't feel super easy to follow to me. Like
shaggy.
It felt a little shaggy. Even being in the room, it was sometimes hard to understand all the words.
After the 2016 Tonys, the year that Hamilton won, he had such sort of a great vision about that kid and then the parents and then that sort of the sort of continuation of the idea from 2013 that we were all that theater kid.
Yeah.
Was so fun. And I like that he has sort of a mission with his opening numbers. This one felt like it didn't land as well as 2016 for me.
Yeah, I think that was probably the earlier idea was maybe a little bit more of a concrete one to drive a number. I was thinking about my favorite Tony opening numbers and, you know, like the Neil Patrick Harris ones, which are like the model, the it's the not just for gays anymore.
Yes.
And the like more one.
Yeah, bigger is
better. Were like great concrete ideas that were easy to illustrate like in a performance. And I don't think only use the nominated shows as well. This just felt kind of like, let's trot out the nominated shows and show you what they are.
Oh, sure. That quick pass of all of them at the beginning.
Yeah.
It was almost too quick. Like, didn't he not get lifted up in his Kiss Me, Kate cross of the stage? You saw Stephanie Stiles be carried by two of the guys for Kiss Me, Kate.
Yeah.
And then he was supposed to be carried, but he, like, jumped on. I mean, there's a lot going on.
A lot happening. I think I didn't even see that because there was just a lot to watch.
So it was just fast and furious in a way, sort of like the 2009 year where Bret Michaels gets hit on the head with the, like, it's just a lot going on in a very little amount of time.
Yes.
It is fun to see a bunch of people on stage in all sorts of costumes. That idea of community was so strong.
I thought that by the end of the number that like seeing everyone on stage together was pretty moving.
It's funny that sort of our calling call card to the world is like a bunch of people in costumes holding their hands, jazz hands out, splayed. That's
yes.
Like the way that we say we are here as theater people.
Yes, I guess that we're not trying to dissuade people from having any stereotypes, but it's fine. It's fine. The world needs more jazz hands. I did think that something that happened during the commercial breaks would have been great to have on the live show, which is that during a few of the commercial breaks, two things happen during the commercial breaks. Sometimes there are live things that we all get to watch in the auditorium. Sometimes we get to watch Broadway trivia on a large screen in the middle of the stage. Like, all of a sudden you hear Seven Rings playing, and it's like, what former Broadway star turned pop star is singing this song? And I'm like, do people in this room not know Ariana Grande? I think everyone here knows who she is.
An intern at the Broadway League needed something to do for
yes.
their spring project. It's fine.
It's all good. It gives us something to look at. But during the other breaks, James Corden did, I suppose, it's inspired by Carpool Karaoke, but he did like live Broadway karaoke with people in the audience. And I think that it happened three times and all times was amazing. Ben Platt sang Tomorrow from Annie.
Oh my gosh, that must have been so good.
Which was very good. And he started out sounding very sort of half-hearted, and then all of a sudden, like, the baritone came out and it was very moving. And he at one point said, "Where's SJP when you need her?" Sarah Jessica Parker, mm-hmm. an original Annie. I thought I liked that little shout out. And then in another break, he found Anthony Ramos, who picked 96,000 from In the Heights.
Oh,
and
fun.
He's, of course, going to be playing Usnavi in the Heights movie. And then he started it, and then he found Chris Jackson, who was originally Benny and In the Heights, and they started just doing 96,000 together.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
It got cut off because of commercial break time in the middle of Chris singing, and I was like, this is criminal. But it was so cool to have, like, this relived In the Heights moment there. Like, too bad Karen Olivo couldn't have joined in. And then the last moment was James had been looking for Billy Porter, like, since the first karaoke break, and was
how
like,
how
do
you miss Billy Porter in that costume? He's like, Roth. You can't miss him.
Yes. The first time I think that he was backstage because he was about to present an award, but he finally found Billy Porter, who was not wearing that skirt in the audience.
Okay.
I think it was like detachable, maybe. And he got him to sing Everything's Coming Up Roses, which I think some of the lyrics were a little improvised, but it was amazing, and he ended up going on stage and like doing a whole thing on stage with it.
Good for him.
And he was great. He sounded good, and he was like teasing the orchestra and being like, "We'll see if it's in my key." And there was like an "All right, bitches, let's do this" moment. So, I mean, Billy Porter can command the attention of a giant theater quite easily.
Yes,
and he totally ruled. So, that was my favorite sort of not seen on TV moment.
It was an evening of not many surprises, in
yes.
my opinion. What did were you surprised by anything? At least the performances, the energy, if things landed versus not landing. I'm intrigued by what landed in the theater versus what we saw at home.
Yeah. No, I think that I always find the musical numbers that the shows choose to do on the Tonys, I always find them a little lacking. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, for instance, like last year, Dear Evan Hansen did the perfect thing. Like they brought out Ben Platt. He sang his one big song. And it's simple. It's clean. He can do the number completely unadulterated. And it works really well that way. I think that when the shows come out and feel like they have to sandwich in like three songs into what I have to imagine is like 3 minutes total, mm-hmm. at most, it starts to feel very piecemeal and confusing. And I think a lot of shows that are completely great end up turning in sort of mediocre or at least like hard to follow performances. I actually felt like last night everyone did really well in that regard. I particularly was impressed by Beetlejuice because I think that if any show was going to tend towards a sort of overstuffed, let's throw everything at the wall, show them all of our stagecraft at once performance, Beetlejuice would make sense because it's like the most crazy theatrical of the shows. And there's all sorts of like stagecraft trickery that happens.
Right.
And obviously they have the songs from the movie that are in the show and then the original songs. And I thought that they really reinvented everything. The Deo was not presented in the same way it is in the show. The whole "This is Welcome to a Show About Death" song was completely sort of rewritten to be Tony relevant.
Right.
And I thought it was funny, and I thought that sort of the run of the number went really well. So that was sort of something I was pleasantly surprised by.
I'm always impressed with Alex Brightman on these live things because on the Today Show, he also memorized original lyrics to that number
as
well.
I didn't
see that. So not only is he like memorizing new lyrics for a song he already knows that he's going to perform once on live TV, it's just like it's a big lift. And so the fact that he does it is, I think, very impressive.
Yeah, no, he has kind of the nimbleness of like a stand-up comic,
totally.
I think. And not a lot of performers could do that. And I think, too, like Hadestown, I think, it's such a sort of strongly conceptual show. I think it could be hard to excerpt from and give the audience that hasn't seen it sort of proper context. But I thought that the number that they chose was presented kind of as well as it could be.
I thought it was a weird choice.
Oh, okay.
We can duke it out a little bit. I love Wait For Me. Like, I loved Hadestown. I am happy that it won. I love the number. I've been listening to the song that they performed basically on repeat for a week. But it just didn't, like, land in the way that it did in the theater. Did you?
Yeah, well, I think that part of the advantage of being in the theater is that you see those swinging lamps that were in the number. They feel just so much more immediate, and you get like a sense of depth and a sense of kind of the traveling that's happening like much more clearly.
I was surprised that they didn't choose an up-tempo. I mean, some of that trombone music is just so fun in that show. And to do a number that highlights your one principal actor who's not nominated for an award that evening.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I love that song, but there's other choices for that show.
Yeah, that's a good point because I mean, you look at something like the Oklahoma number that was done. To me, that was a good balance of like, obviously there was a lot of push behind Ali Stroker, mm-hmm. and she won. But then it also kind of highlighted the whole ensemble as well.
Right.
And I sometimes think that these shows that are up for Best Musical or up for Best Revival, maybe it's that they want to show the whole ensemble and not just focus on one person. You know, with Hadestown, I thought maybe they would do a Persephone song, or maybe they would at least do the opening number, which sort of introduces everybody.
Right. Yeah.
It seems to me like, I don't know, maybe because of the Best Musical push, they wanted something that showed everyone.
Well, you got to do the walls expanding with the LED screens in the back. You got to show the lighting. You know, all those other things that Hadestown won for, mm-hmm. we were seeing those elements on the telecast. So I was like, okay, I see what you did. I wanted more of a, like, an up-tempo. I don't know.
Is dancing right now for people who can't see him.
It was an interesting choice for me.
Yeah, I see your point of view. I can agree with you on some points.
What landed for me the best was the prom, at least from home.
Interesting.
That number leapt off of the screen in a way that it doesn't necessarily, like, I think it looked better at home than it does in the theater.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing to hear. Because I mean, I think that in the theater, something like The Prom or even the Tootsie number two, it just read as like a lot of people singing and dancing in a group. And it didn't pop to me as much as something like Beetlejuice, which was like staged in a very imaginative way, or even the Hadestown number, even if overall it didn't read as well, it like there was like a focal point. It wasn't just like I'm looking at people dancing in lines. So it's interesting to hear that the way it was, obviously it was shot really well.
Yeah, I think there maybe were like tighter angles or like all of that stuff where like people slide on their knees towards the camera. We had Ephraim Sykes in Ain't Too Proud.
Yes.
We had some of that going on in the Prom number as well. You know, it's like really feeling like closer rather than like that big line of people that you sometimes get on that stage.
I can't believe I didn't talk about Ain't Too Proud yet, because that was also, I thought that was also a good.
Yeah.
Sort of selection of numbers. And I was really happy that they highlighted the orchestra, which I think is like such a crucial part of the show and how vibrant it feels. And
yeah, they had them all on stage, right?
Yeah. Which is what happens at the end of the show live. So it was cool to see that too. I found some things a little strange.
I want to hear all about them.
I think that the number one thing that jumped out at me as being a little weird was something that I, on face value, really enjoyed, which was the sort of the one other big original musical interlude, which James Corden, Sarah Bareilles, Josh Groban, and momentarily Neil Patrick Harris did a sort of rewritten takeoff on Michael in the Bathroom from Be More Chill. As anyone who listens to this podcast knows, I'm a big Be More Chill fan. I know not everyone in the world is, but I would say it's a show with a pretty giant audience and I think an extremely young audience. And one of the points that was sort of made by the people who run the Tonys last night was that this has been like a really landmark season for Broadway with higher attendance than ever and also a younger audience than ever. And I couldn't help immediately thinking, well, that's because of Be More Chill, because all the teens are going to Be More Chill. And it just felt like completely absent from the telecast to me. And I didn't realize until afterwards that number was presented with like no reference to Be More Chill.
Yeah.
So the fact that it was from Be More Chill.
Right.
And I don't know. It just made me a little disappointed to see A, that like, you know, George Salazar, who sings that song in the show and who really has a breakout star moment because of that song. Mm-hmm. And that song is what has gone viral on the internet and brought so much of a new audience to the show. For him not to be involved, and I don't even know that he, you know, got to be there last night, or any shout out to Joe Iconis, who was nominated for the score.
I saw on Twitter this morning he didn't even know it was going to happen.
Yeah. So I find that all a little strange, and I sort of want to know a little bit more about the behind-the-scenes story behind that. I don't know how you present a song that is, like, clearly the song from someone's show and, like, not even tell them it's happening.
Yeah. Or because it's a song that a lot of people in the theater know, but it's not necessarily, like, a household song. It's not everyone at home is going to obviously know that it's from Be More Chill and that it's a shout out to them and their inclusion in the season.
Totally.
It felt like there was sort of an introductory step missing.
Yeah. No. And I mean, by the way, I think it was done really, really well.
Oh, it was done really well.
I was like, this is the kind of thing that I would like to see more of at the Tonys. I mean, I thought that Sarah Bareilles and Josh Groban together as hosts were fantastic. I would like them to come back at some point.
Yeah.
It was very funny. It was very cleverly rewritten. And at some point, I actually was like, maybe they'll open a door and George will be there. But it was, it's just sort of maybe mishandled a little bit.
Do you know if it was done live? We couldn't tell at home.
I believe it was taped because we were watching it on a screen as well.
Got it. I assumed probably they've got a lot to do in the evening, that as much as they can get out of the way before the telecast, they probably do.
I'm not sure if Neil Patrick Harris was there. I don't recall seeing him. Mm-hmm. Not that I saw every famous person there, but I would think he would have been recognizable.
Sure. They would probably have highlighted him a little bit more throughout the evening. He's He's a well-known name. He's a favorite. He's a big champion.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
What else was odd for you?
I'm trying to think. That was the one thing that kind of jumped out at me. I am interested, and I don't know if as a performer and also someone who talks to people in the ensemble a lot, if you know, I am interested in what it takes to get a performance on the Tonys, because I thought, I guess this is a bit of a offshoot from Be More Chill, but, you know, like Choir Boy, which was nominated for Best Play, but is very unique in having sort of musical and dance elements, that got a performance on the show. The Cher Show, which I'm pretty sure was not nominated for Best Musical, got a big performance.
Yes.
And I think it was the only show that wasn't nominated for Best Musical that got a performance. So I was a little confused, and it was like, how did this happen? How are these decisions made? Like, I just don't get it.
My impression is that the decision of what shows get to be on the telecast is made by some grouping between CBS and the League and the Broadway League and the American Theater Wing. Mm-hmm. And sort of first pick go to Best Musical nominees and Best Revival of a Musical nominees. Basically, you have a spot. And then those fill in from there. Mm-hmm. My other impression is that whether you're nominated or not, the production pays for that spot. So, you know, Roundabout Theater is paying for the opportunity to have a 3-minute commercial on the Tony Awards. Mm-hmm. The Cher Show paid for a 3-minute commercial on the Tony Awards, which, by the way, I thought they did exactly right for that show. Mm-hmm. I mean, they trotted out Stephanie. She made you laugh. They put out the costumes, and you were like, that's the show. There you go. If you want to see that, then you should go see Cher. If that's not for you, then you should not go see Cher. So I thought Choir Boy was interesting, maybe because they really see it having a life in regional theaters that was something that they wanted to push. And also because Camille was nominated, there was sort of an extra element of let's show this other thing that was going on.
True.
But I did feel like Choir Boy's performance, while I really enjoyed it, was the head scratcher.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting to hear. Because I was thinking, again, not to OD on talking about Be More Chill, I was thinking there's a show with a really young audience. Maybe CBS would be interested in, like, for ratings, younger people tuning into the Tonys. If any Be More Chill fans knew that there was going to be a performance on TV, they would all watch it. But that was, just one thought.
My impression is that the production has to pay for it. And if it's not something that the production wants to pay, and my impression is it's like $250,000 or something. Like, it's a lot of money. So it is a big financial decision to perform on the Tony Awards. Do you remember with the Spring Awakening revival how Ken Davenport like crowdfunded their Tony performance? So the Deaf West revival, basically, because the show was closed, they didn't have any money, and so he I don't remember if it was which platform he used, but he basically raised $250,000 so that he could get all of the people together, rehearse them in the space, record the audio track, get the set pieces they needed, and then perform on the Tony Awards that night.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you likewise know anything about how what is behind who gets to come from each show?
No, I'm sure that has a that is about with that has something to do with press agents and managers and nominees and where seats are allocated in the space as well. Often you see sort of the nominees are down front, but then you'll see other people from the production much further back.
Yeah, I was going to say that you sometimes see you see some of the creative teams go on stage and then like shout out to people in the balcony.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, I mean, there are shows where you see the entire cast there. There are shows where you see like not very many people there at all. And that's always been a head scratcher for me as well. Like who gets to come? How do they get to come? Are shows allocated a certain number of tickets? If you're a Best Musical or Best Revival nominee, does everyone automatically get to go? Like,
I think you're paying for those tickets unless the production decides to
I see
pay.
This all coming around to ultimately everything has to be paid for.
Right. I mean,
but it makes sense.
Who else is going to pay to rent Radio City Music Hall? You
yeah.
know, like it's a those tickets are the tickets are expensive, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And I mean, I get them for free.
Sure.
But no, but I'm sure they are. And I've been fascinated just to see the fact that like it really is packed in there. There are very few empty seats. And it's fun to – I think the Tonys are, you know, in general fun for people watching if you're there. And not only to see the famous people, but you just see all these other people. And you're like, who are these people? And, you know
– and sometimes they're the most important people and you just don't know
them.
They
are often the most important people.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I ran into someone I know there who I was like – why are you here? And I know he's a big Broadway fan, but he works for an advertising agency that works for with CBS. And so a bunch of people from that group are there. And it's like, yes, I guess the people who fund these things are important.
Right.
But it's I will say one charming anecdote from last night about who are these other people in the room is, you know, I was sitting in the orchestra section, which in Radio City feels like it's like the size of a football field.
Sure.
So I was probably like maybe like rear middle of Radio City, and I was pretty central, which was nice. And I'm sitting around all these people who knows who they are. I think I was sitting close to a lot of people from the Ferryman because there was a lot of screaming anytime the Ferryman around in my general vicinity, anytime the Ferryman went anything. But there was like this little old lady sitting behind me, and I was like, I guess she's someone. And during the pre-show awards, when the man who won for Best Book of a Musical, which I think was for Tootsie,
yeah,
all of a sudden this woman goes, "That's my son!" And she like stood up and was just repeatedly saying, "That's my son, that's my son, that's my son." And she's this adorable little elderly woman. And she was just like covering her mouth and like tearing up. And it was like, it was so amazing to see up close, like the people who are referred to in the speeches are real people.
And sometimes they're there in the room.
Yeah. And I think that he had also referenced his partner who was also sitting with her. And the two of them were together. And it was just like the most heartwarming moment everywhere. All of us sitting around her were like congratulating her. And like,
oh, that's great.
It was very cute. And then her son came to see her later, and she was trying to tell her, like, "We'll text. I have to go back to my seat." But so that was kind of a special thing to observe up close.
What was your favorite moment of the whole proceedings?
Oh, man. I think that might have been it. I loved being next to her. It was so cool. Yeah, I liked that. I liked Rachel's speech. I liked Sergio's speech. I in general, I guess this is not one moment, but I was very happy to see Hadestown take home as many awards as it did. I kind of figured that this year was gonna be somewhat similar to last year in that I'm actually realizing that Dear Evan Hansen was 2 years ago, not last year. Feels like it was just last year.
Last year was Ben's visit.
Yeah. So
have been celebrating these small sort of chamber musicals with our biggest award.
Exactly. And I think that people have always asked me, like, do you think the Tonys get it right, like, more than the Oscars do? And in recent years, I feel like they have. Not that the other shows that are nominated are not deserving. Like, they're all great shows. I've enjoyed, you know, all of the shows that were nominated this year. But last year, it kind of felt like a David versus Goliath situation. Mm-hmm. It was either going to be Mean Girls or The Band's Visit. And Mean Girls was a lot of fun. I thought it was really well done. But The Band's Visit was kind of like, it felt like a once in a decade kind of musical. And it was just so different. And it really felt like it was pushing the art form forward in a way we hadn't seen before. And, you know, it was a little musical, like literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And I was really hopeful that, like, that sort of just how innovative it was would be rewarded. And it totally was.
Mm-hmm.
And this year it kind of felt like the same. It was going to come down to the same thing between Hadestown and a show like The Prom or a show like Tootsie that is a classic, big, let's see, Broadway musical comedy, and this smaller show that, you know, started at New York Theater Workshop and has had this, you know, two to three year trudge to Broadway through various productions. And so I was, you know, I was likewise really happy to see that rewarded.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a big Prom fan. I love the show. I was sort of hoping for a Prom surprise last night, but Hadestown is such a beautiful show, and it's such a great theatrical experience to sit in the theater at the Walter Kerr, and they all come out at the beginning and they welcome us into the space, and you're like, I'm going to listen to a story told by people who know that I'm here, and I'm going to sit in a room with 1,000 other people, and we're going to hear a story we've heard time and again told in a really kind of present, exciting way.
And in a new way, and you feel like you're disappearing into sort of a world for a little while, which is nice. I will say, in support of The Prom, that it was incredible to see and feel the support for it in the room. I thought that anytime there was a Prom nominee, the amount of applause was insane.
Right.
I felt like the Prom nominees actually got the most applause in the room.
And Heidi Schreck, too. That
yes.
was the other thing. What the Constitution means to me, you could sort of hear. I think when we watch on TV, you can hear sort of like the people up close clapping politely, and then the screams going on from the balconies behind. There's like two different levels of sound.
Yeah.
And what the Constitution means to me and the Prom seem to have a lot more screams coming from the back of the house.
Yeah, yeah. There was a group of people near me who, like, they looked like high school kids, and I wondered if they were Prom related in some way, but they were very, very pro-Prom. but yeah, that was definitely something that felt visceral up close.
Tell me about that. Tell me about what you did after the after party, after parties.
Yeah, there was only one after party for me. I do not get invited to the many others. So there, I think that there are many different levels of Tony after party and many different levels of exclusivity. The official after Tony party happens at the Plaza Hotel in New York.
It's good they don't fly you to another city for the party. That seems like a long way.
That would seem like a lot, yes. Not the Plaza elsewhere.
No.
And then there's like a very famous party at the Carlyle Hotel, which one of the biggest and sort of most heavyweight Broadway PR firms throws. That is a party that I think feels a little more insidery, a little more sceney. You see pictures of it in the New York Times style section the next day, although I haven't looked yet. Some shows have individual parties as well. I'm not sure who did what last night yet, but I know that, like, last year The Band's Visit had a big party of its own. And I'm sidebar interested in how that happens, because, like, what if your show doesn't win? Do you still have a giant party?
I think you do. You just have sort of a different energy.
A different energy of, like, we're losing a lot of money.
or we have a lot of work to do tomorrow to figure out. I mean, everyone has a lot of work to do. Whether you're Hadestown and you're like, okay, great, we won eight. Well, they won eight Tonys, I think.
I believe so,
okay.
Yeah.
Like, how do we take this momentum and move forward? Or if you're Tootsie or The Prom, or if you're the Prom didn't win anything. So then you go, how do we go from being seven Tony nominations to zero Tony awards? And how do we push forward that and keep building an audience?
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting question.
Both shows have a lot of work to do today.
Yeah, in different ways. Yeah, I'd love to hear about how that happens.
But I think regardless, you're probably having a well-deserved drink or five.
Yes, five,
after
10.
Party.
Yeah. So the Plaza party is what I get to go to. And it's, first of all, it's beautiful. I mean, this is a beautiful, very fancy hotel that is completely taken over by the Tony after party. There are basically like two floors, and the lower floor is, on an ordinary day, this like very fancy food court. I feel like when I say food court, people think of like a mall food court. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. It's like giant, like the size of the whole hotel, all of these little vendors that have very, very good food. And it's just kind of like open season for a night. It's just like more free food than you have seen in your life and like very, very good.
All right, food. I'll see you there next year.
There's like a frozen yogurt store that's just like, go into the frozen yogurt store and do what you like, which I feel like is everyone's secret dream.
Yeah,
to like
yeah, yeah.
Have their own ice cream shop,
definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
So the snacks are amazing. I feel like the snacks need to get props.
They deserve their own Tony Award.
Yes, they deserve their own Tony. But I think that really the coolest thing about this party is just seeing everyone mingling and seeing who comes and who talks to who, because this is – it really is kind of the first stop for the night for most people. So you might think that, you know, someone who won Best Actor in a Musical would just immediately go to their show's party and skip the whole larger general shindig. But everybody really does – come to this party first. So you see people like walking around carrying Tony Awards and also carrying like a tiny like plate for a wonton and like trying to balance on a bar stool in a ball gown, and just everyone squeezing through each other and people meeting each other. And it's nice because I think the people who won awards feel very accessible. You don't feel like they're trying to not be seen or not talk to people who are not involved with their shows. Like you see, you know, regular people walking up to award winners and congratulating them and actually being engaged with, which is really nice to see. Like it doesn't have a weird feeling of exclusivity. And I ran into Sergio there, so I got to see him, which was exciting. And I saw Joey Conis there. And I ran into former podcast guest Daphne Rubin Vega, which was nice. So it's just funny. It's just like I'm like, oh, I just walked past Regina King. I just walked past Santino Fontana's chilling, and like Kelly O'Hara's congratulating Damon Dono from Oklahoma. Like it's cool just to like be a fly on the wall and see all that.
Well, I mean, it feels like it's kind of indicative of our community, right?
Yeah.
I loved the part of the evening where James Corden was trying to get people against each other.
Yes.
You know, like was it Ben Platt and Rachel Brosnahan, right?
Yeah.
And he said the whole premise is that we all love each other, but let's start some fights to get ratings.
Yes.
It just felt so true. I don't know. Jokes like that don't always land, but that really rang true. Like, this is a supportive community. We like being around each other. We like celebrating each other's successes.
Yeah. I've always wondered if there's something I don't know about like the real inner workings of the Broadway community, but it just seems like everybody loves each other and everyone is so supportive. It's like the Great British Baking Show
of
performing arts. Like, it's not really a competition where people are like angling for each other's heads at all.
No, this part of it is so political and is sort of it's sort of beyond the art. It's more about the producing, right? There's a lot of campaigning that goes along like any other award ceremony. But I think at the heart of it, we're all just really impressed with each other's work ethic and each other's talent. I think that's why you see somebody like Stephanie or Santino winning these awards. Yes, it's for the performances that they're giving in the shows they're in right now, but also it ends up being kind of an award for your body of work and also being an award for just like people liking you. I think people like Santino Fontana and they like Stephanie J. Block.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels good to give them an award.
Completely.
Andre DeShields, you know, like Celia Keenan Bolger. We like these people. We want to put them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say, just mentioning Andre DeShields made me think, I mean, you see, there was also the bit where he was making everyone practice their I Lost faces.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And which I really enjoyed. Kristen Chenoweth was amazing and hilarious as usual. But I was particularly paying attention to the featured actor category because I love the two guys in Ain't Too Proud, Ephraim Sykes and Jeremy Pope. I was really rooting for Ephraim. I had a feeling that probably having two people from the same show is always
yeah, going to end pulls. Up splitting the yeah. votes. But I mean, they looked so happy to see Andre DeShields
oh,
win.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, how amazing is it for them? I mean, he is like one of the most trailblazing Black performers on Broadway for them as young Black men in this show that is incredibly important to the community. Like, to see him winning, like, that has to feel important. And they, I don't know, I'm sure they're disappointed they didn't win also, but like, it
sure.
felt sort of moving to see how happy they were for him.
I'm a Northwest person, and so I've known Caitlin Kinnunen since she was maybe 12.
Oh, wow.
We're very tight. And yes, of course, Caitlin wants to win a Tony Award, you know, mm-hmm. like, but I think a big part of it for those young performers is just to be told, Caitlin, you are doing the kind of work that Beth is doing, that Stephanie is doing, that Kelly is doing. That is also a gift. And I think if you can be in the right headspace, if you're someone like Jeremy or Ephraim or Caitlin, that is a prize in and of itself.
That completely. I was thinking of that in terms of someone like Damon and Caitlin as well. I feel like this is just not their year. Like, this is the year that really brought them to attention and like gave them this huge spotlight and will hopefully like be a launching pad for them going forward.
Sure. I mean, all sort of different trajectories, right? Caitlin, mm-hmm. I think, has been pounding the pavement since she was a Spring Awakening replacement. I feel like Jeremy sort of had such an incredible breakout year.
Yeah.
Ephraim's been, you know, doing ensemble work since, I think, The Little Mermaid. So
I was going to say he is like an ensemblist person.
Oh,
totally.
For sure. And to see them all sort of kind of level up. Let's use a Be More Chill reference.
Yeah.
Right. To see like, all right, we've gotten to this level. Now what opportunities are going to come to your way? And what are you going to do with those opportunities? I think that's thrilling. And anyone can be happy for Ephraim in that world. You know, we all want to yeah. see what Ephraim does next because
yeah.
he's an incredible force of a performer.
Yeah,
I mean, we all saw it on the telecast. He's insane, his energy level.
Yeah, I feel like the world knows that he's a star now. And
yeah.
like whatever he does next, like, it'll be exciting to see. I mean, I feel like it's been established that we're both very happy about Hadestown, but as far as shows or performers, is there anyone you really wish had been nominated who wasn't?
No, but I wish there was a Tony Award for Best Ensemble.
Yes.
Like, I'm gonna throw in a plug there. I know that we talk about how hard it would be politically or like what qualifies as a good ensemble, but those people work their friggin' butts off. And to be able to see a category that really celebrated the ensemble actors, I think I really feel like it's the Tony Awards next step, and we're just waiting for the right champion
totally,
to say
yeah.
now is the time.
And there are other Broadway and theater related awards that do reward ensembles, right?
Yeah, the OBs, I believe, do an a off Broadway ensemble. The mm-hmm. Cheetah Rivera Awards do a Best Ensemble.
Yes,
award.
I think that's what I was thinking of.
But then when we look to our other sort of counterparts around the Jeff Awards in Chicago, the Door Awards in Toronto, they all have Best Ensemble categories as well.
Mm-hmm.
It really feels the SAG Awards have a Best Ensemble category.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's time, folks.
Yeah.
I think
yeah,
we're just
I'm
waiting.
Totally with you on that.
I think we're just waiting for the right person at the top to be like, nah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we do with the ensemblists, is we're laying groundwork and showing off these great ensemble performers, kind of just reminding people time and again how incredibly talented and skilled they are.
Yeah, well, I vote for that. Not that I have a vote in anything, but is there like a case against it for any reason? Or
I just don't think there's a financial or political reason to do it.
Uh-huh. Got it.
You know, I think if we got a new, I don't, this is above my pay grade, but if we got a new league president or the head of CBS said, we want to do an ensemble award, we'd do an ensemble award tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just not somebody with enough power who wants to flip the switch.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Well, if anybody who has power is listening, Best Ensemble should be next. I will say that I was.
What are your wishes?
Well, my primary wish was for Patrick Vail
Oklahoma. Mm-hmm.
I think he's popped up on every like should have been nominated list, but and featured actor in a musical was like a super competitive category this year, and there's everybody who was nominated was deserving, and I think part of the problem is there were such as it is that there were so many shows that had more than one really standout featured performer, mm-hmm. not someone who was just like the comic relief who stood out. You know, there were maybe the ensemble was shining more this year, but I don't know. I think that he completely, for me, transformed my idea of the character he
right.
plays.
Which He's, is Judd Fry in
yeah,
Oklahoma?
In
right.
Oklahoma. Okay. And he, I mean, I think that he's the person who like haunts everyone when you leave, and so many of my conversations about the show have been about him and how he made us all kind of rethink Judd as not this menace, but as this sort of outcast created by society. I don't know, what he did with the part was just so thought-provoking and really stayed with me emotionally. And I think hopefully, like we were saying about the people who are nominated, again, it'll be interesting to see what he does next. And, you know, I think when you see someone like that who is playing completely against type and completely against the way we've thought of the role, hopefully whatever they do next, maybe it'll be something that they wouldn't ordinarily be cast for, but that people have faith that they'll do something interesting with it.
The other person I'll put in that Wish were nominated mix is Leslie Kritzer. I'm not the first person
yes,
to say it.
Totally.
I won't be the last. But I think it was just the case of like not enough spots for incredible female performances.
You're totally right. Thank you for mentioning Leslie. She is in Beetlejuice.
Yes.
She's hilarious.
She's hilarious. She sounds great. She commands the stage. And she's wonderful.
And she wears the hell out of some amazing costumes, too.
Yes. And one really incredible quick makeup and costume change that I can't figure out how they do.
Yes. I think I know what you're referring to.
Yes. It's the change into Miss Argentina where
yes.
you go, how did
she's
you do
like
that?
Blue
you,
out
yeah,
of
yeah,
nowhere.
Your entire body is blue. Where you? How did you do that? So I wish that we would have been able to see her nominated as well. But, you know, I don't, we aren't the ones nominating.
Well, I think that overall, you know, it was a fun night. It was a bit of an exhausting night for me, but
yes.
I'm super grateful to be able to be exhausted the day after the Tonys, and hopefully it'll happen again next year.
Yeah, definitely.
Yay. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming, Mo.
Thank you for having me.
It's so fun to talk to you about the Tonys, and we'll make this happen again.
Awesome.
If you would like to hear more of Mo's podcast, The Ensemblist, you can find him at The Ensemblist on Instagram and Twitter. He amazingly records twice weekly episodes. And you can also go to his website, theensemblist.com, if you'd like to learn a little bit more about what life in the ensemble of a Broadway show is like. If you are a fan of Billboard on Broadway, please subscribe and give us nice reviews and stars on iTunes. This is a great time post-Tonys to kind of go back on the many episodes related to the past Broadway season, many of which have Tony winners in them in the Billboard on Broadway archives. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, as well as on iTunes. And you can always find me on social media at Rebecca Milzoff on Twitter, at YaDownWithRMM on Instagram. You can always use hashtag Billboard on Broadway to talk about the podcast. And we'll be back soon in the post-Tony world.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.